The Autoblog podcast is brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. This is episode 391 of the Autoblog podcast. I'm joined this week by Mike Harley and Brandon Turkus, and we talk about the new boss at Lincoln, the Scion XB and IQ winding down, the Dodge Charger SRT Hellcat, and cars that won't make it to 2015. That's all ahead on episode 391 of the Autoblog podcast. Hello, welcome to the Autoblog podcast. I'm Dan Roth, and I'm joined this week by Mike Harley.
Hello, guys.
And Brandon Turkus. How's it going, Brandon?
Good evening, everyone.
So let's start with the garage, and I don't know. Who wants to...
Brandon, you go first.
I was going to say, we can start... No, I think, Mike, we should start with you, because Brandon and I, we can tag team.
Yeah, we have a good little arrangement set up for this.
Yeah. So, Mike, go first. Ignore my irrelevant question. What are you driving?
McLaren 650S, which is the successor to the MP4 12C, or just 12C, depending on what year you want to call it. It is, let's see, how do you say this gently? Probably one of my... best cars of all time. I mean, absolutely incredible.
Gosh, you don't say.
It is absolutely my expectation. You know, you come in with this, okay, it's a supercar. The thing stickers at $331,000 was the sticker price. Base price is like $280 something. This thing had just gobs of carbon fiber upgrades and stuff like that.
And see, that's weird to me because McLaren is like the non-flashy supercar company, right? So why do they give you – I mean, I guess just, people want it.
It's just the way they did it. You know, not a lot of – it's had the sport exhaust. It had a couple performance upgrades, but not much. But, you know, I just drove the Ferrari 458 Speciale, and that I figured, okay, that's the new benchmark. Everything's got to reach for that car. And then you drive the McLaren 650S, which is – almost the competitor. Really, the Italia is more competitive because this is not a track model like the Speciale. But the two engines, both V8s, one's naturally aspirated, one's turbocharged. Suspension is completely different on the two. Both mid-engine, both carbon ceramic brakes. But the believe it or not, the McLaren is quicker. It feels stronger. And it's hard to describe, but you punch it, and there's a momentary turbo lag, and then it just absolutely screams. You know, you line it up out front, put it in first gear, pull the right paddle. And by the way, people that don't know, the paddles on a McLaren are like a teeter-totter. They're connected. They go right through the steering wheel column. And so you pull on the back on the right one, and the left one moves forward, which is kind of cool because you're never sort of in that situation where you're pulling both paddles simultaneously trying to figure out what gear you're in. So you pull back on the right side of the paddle, you floor it, there's a 1 or 2 foot rollout where the turbos start to spool up, and then the back tires just light up and it peels out about the next 15 to 20 feet, and then you engage second gear and then hooks up and takes off down the street. It's the coolest thing ever.
I believe you mean down the drag strip, not
down the drag strip. Yeah, not on public.
Not down your residential subdivision.
No. Not through the crossing guard.
The homeowners association doesn't know anything about the black tire marks in front of your house, Mike.
But
that's why he needs a wife who's a banker.
It is unfreaking believable how good the car is. I'm always taking these cars up on Mulholland.
You have a tough life, Mike.
I know. But most of the time, you know, the sport bikes come up on your tail and you pull over and you wave them by. And, whether you're in your FRS or your GTI or something, this was one that I had sport bikes pulling over for me. It's that good. It's that quick. The contact patch 305s in the back wearing Pirelli Corsas. Just sticky tires. Do you know the car has no sway bars?
It's all like an electronic type deal or something like that.
It's all electro, hydraulic, whatever it is. So the ride down the road is
actually pretty good.
almost like S-class worthy. It is absolutely boggles the mind how good it rides, how well it rides down the road, and the absence of tire noise. For some reason, it's a really quiet ride. Now, it doesn't sound nearly as good as a Ferrari. Appearance-wise, it's evolved to look a lot more like a P1. Still, I would say the Ferrari still has that edgier, screaming, you know, pound on chest look. You know, I think the Ferrari still is a little dartier as far as agile. And what are you doing?
I'm sorry, that was the airlock.
No, that was actually my canteen. I was just shutting it. Sorry. I'll do that away from the mic from now on.
Your flask.
In my flask.
It's not that early, late.
However you get through the podcast is, you know.
It's how I get through hearing about Mike's awesome cars. Right? I just drink.
But I'm almost done. So the cool thing for me would be I would love to have the 458 Special and the 650S on a racetrack, a road course. My bet was that the 650S would be slightly faster because it's fat. It just pulls harder. But once again, I'm betting the next 458 successor will be turbocharged, and it's gonna close that gap. You know, there's no substitute for a forced induction motor just with crap loads of torque. So
where do you go from here, though? Like, now you've kind of achieved your holy grail, right? Like, where are you gonna go next?
I start at the bottom. Yaris.
Yaris. Yeah, I mean.
Versa note.
You're doing it all wrong. Mitsubishi Mirage.
Let me tell you, any of those kind of cars, I can tell you about them. And I would, you know, we can trade. That's fine. I'll take your
car. I do have a dream. My dream is to drive the, I have got two cars on my bucket list that have still never been fulfilled. One is the McLaren F1, and the other is the Porsche 959. So once I drive those two, I can retire. So if there are any listeners out there that have a McLaren F1, they're going for, what, 14 to 15 million bucks these days?
You are firmly rooted in the 90s, my friend. That is, I mean, just,
those are my dream cars. But I'm an old guy.
F40?
Not really. The F40 is interesting, but I don't think I've read enough about the F40. I was in awe with the F40, but I never really died. You know, never really desired to drive it.
See, I think the F40 is not so much a thing you drive as much as it's a thing you get in and hang on for dear life.
Yeah, I think it's more of a raging bull.
Yeah.
Without using the Lambo reference there, but.
But it's like, first of all, that's the last Ferrari that had the fingerprints of Enzo all over it. Mm-hmm, so, right. I mean, there is that. But like for me, after that, Ferrari just got. But that car was so ridiculous. And then the Ferrari for me got more interesting on the GT side than any of the other ridiculous cars that follow, like the F50 and the FXX and the Enzo. Like I was, meh. They're all ugly, ridiculous things. I'm gonna go hop into this front engine V12 thing and zoom on out of here.
Yeah, it was interesting because the P1 is such a daily driver. Such a daily driverable car. I mean, it's a pain in the butt to get into. But once you master having it over the big carbon fiber sill, air conditioning, blue ice cold, doing the photo shoot with Drew yesterday, started, stopped, put it in reverse, started, stopped, you know, backed it up 150 times, you know, cranked over every second, never even, you know, whimpered one bit. And a lot of the supercars just are difficult to treat like that. But
I feel like it's a really good car. That's a big thing that I've noticed with, and you know, obviously I haven't driven nearly as many supercars as you have, Mike, but I've driven enough that I know that there's always that impending sense that something is going to break in it.
Doom. Like it's doom.
Every sound you hear, every bump you go over, you're just imagining things that are going to go wrong.
100% true, Brandon. It's In the first couple days I drove the McLaren, every time I drive away, about 10 or 15 seconds, I'd pull out of a driveway and I'd hear a clunk. And I'm like, what's falling off this time? And finally today, as I'm giving it back, I have a GoPro on the back. And I'm thinking, the GoPro just tipped off. And I look and it's the rear wing going through its articulation like it's pre-flight. And it's... And the clunk was the noise of it locking into the rear deck lid. And I'm like, that's what that noise was. But it's cool. So look for the story next month, and I did put a GoPro on the back so you guys can hear the exhaust and look at the wing playing in the wind.
It sounds like Ron Dennis is going to be rather pleased with your story.
So, but it's I miss that car. It was one of those cars you're just like, wow.
Yeah, well, we don't have that kind of supercar cachet for the rest of the garage. So if you're looking for the high point of the podcast, I think we may have just passed. Because Brandon and I are sort of sharing a mark this week. We both have versions of the 2015 Hyundai Genesis. Brandon, I'll let you go because you actually have...
Sedan, right?
Yeah.
The sedan.
So you've got one that's a little different than mine. So what's your take on it?
My example is really interesting because it is, as we call it, you know, we've heard this term before, it's a stripper. Mine is the base rear-wheel drive V6 there's not a single option on it. It is the cheapest possible Genesis sedan you can get.
So, how much is it?
$38,000 plus a $950 destination charge.
Wow.
So under $39,000.
That's a lot of car, just like in terms of the size of the vehicle for the money.
It's a lot of car, and it's still, despite not having any equipment at all, it's still pretty well equipped for what it is. It's, you know, it's a 3.8, it's got 311 horsepower and 293 pound-feet of torque. But it's hauling around a car that is, let's see, where the hell is it? You know, it's a 4,100 pound car. So it's not a super fast car, but during the time I've had it for the past week and I've never really been wanting for power. The engine has made it up to a new, 8-speed automatic that is pretty good. It's a little bit slower on upshifts than, you know, some of the dual clutch units that are out there and whatnot, but as a luxury gearbox, it's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, and Hyundai says that that's their own too. Like everybody else with 8-speeds has the ZF. Hyundai says this is their own 8-speed gearbox.
Yeah, it's not as good as the ZF, but there are a few things that are as good as the ZF.
Right.
So I mean that's an outstanding transmission and. I'd say this is probably about 90% of what that is. Like 90% is good. So it's definitely an acceptable substitute. I've been generally impressed with, you know, how well it drives. I still wouldn't buy one over, you know, one of the Germans or Lexus GS.
What German? I mean, I've driven that car. What German are you going to get for 38 grand? You're talking
a used one.
Price no object. And, you know, and talking about, you know, there aren't going to be a lot of people, I imagine, that buy a base optionless $38,000 Genesis.
Yeah, you
I would agree on that.
Yeah, I don't even think the dealers are going to order them that way so they can have them on the lot.
Yeah.
Why would you if you're a dealer?
The thing is, you add, you know, say you stick with rear wheel drive, there's only, I think, two packages. There's three packages that you can add. And if you add all three of them, it's still only $49,950 plus destination. And you're getting a lot of stuff that you aren't going to get in the Germans at that price point. And that's going to be the thing that sells people on it. But based on a pure like driver's perspective, I wouldn't have one over a 5 Series or an E-Class or an A6 or a GS. But it'd be a tough choice between this and like a Pentastar equipped 300 or... Especially something bigger from Ford, like an MKS.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think, honestly, maybe it's also because it's just newer, but I feel like the Genesis is out in front in both of those comparisons, even with the 3.8. Just it's a rear-wheel drive chassis. And so is the 300, but it's more modern. It's more space efficient. It's probably more solid, I think, than the 300, which isn't terrible. And right. The MKS just feels cramped and not as big.
I'll agree with that. This you get in it and you put it, you know, you climb in and you get the seat set just so. And Mike, you've seen me. I'm a bigger guy, but you just kind of just feel tiny inside this cabin. You've got just plenty of headroom, and there's a lot of shoulder room. The seats are big and wide and comfortable and spacious, and you just kind of sink into them. And it's just a very accommodating place that I don't think, you know, the domestics are going to be able to really match.
Yeah. Well, and so the seats in yours, were they those like super adjustable ones, or is there like an upgrade? Cause I'm looking at it like in terms of what they did for this generation of the Genesis. And they said, you know, one of the things that we, Hyundai came out with this car a while ago to New England and gave us a little dog and pony show. And they said, you know, we really benchmarked the Germans with the seats. And in the one that I'm driving, which is the 5-liter rear wheel drive, the seats are really good. And they, I mean, very adjustable. They even have like extendable bottom cushions. So you get that extra thigh support.
I don't have the extendable bottom cushion. I'm not sure. That is available on the 3.8.
Yeah.
It's you got available. Nothing on yours.
No, I'm not kidding. It is as basic as it gets. It's halogen headlights. It still has navigation. It still has heated seats. It still has LED turn signals and LED tail lights. Doesn't have a sunroof. 18-inch wheels, base stereo. It's as bare bones as it gets.
Yeah, but I mean, even this is the thing with Hyundai.
But it's still good. Everything right. is still good. I mean,
I think the base stereo
Getting an 8-inch nav screen. Right. The base stereo is good.
It's a Lexicon, which I mean, it's owned by Harman, but still.
This one is actually below the Lexicon.
Oh, is it? I didn't know they had one below.
Yeah, this one is unbranded. Because I think there are two Lexicon. Yeah, there's a 14-speaker Lexicon, and then there's a 17-speaker Lexicon. Right. And this one, you have to add a $4,000 package just to get the 14-speaker stereo.
Huh.
So I have no idea what I have beyond that, but it's probably, like, I'd say it's maybe an 8 or a 10-speaker if I were lucky.
It's got some speakers.
It has an speaker.
It makes noise. All right, I have a question.
Okay.
What do you think of yours?
Well, this is what I'm getting at. Like, so you've had this like a week now.
Yep.
Right? Okay.
Get rid of it tomorrow.
The first day it showed up, what was your like first impression of it?
I think it's really handsome. I think that's really kind of the thing, that the overwhelming feeling that I had about it at first. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. People might think, you know, we get these cars and the first thing we go out and do is drive them around in circles. But the reality is I can get a car and the first day I don't drive it at all because I'm working or, you know, something. So in this case, it wasn't like I got out and ran and drove it straight away. But I climbed around it and I messed with it a little bit. And, you know, the overall impression is that it's a very handsome car inside and out. The material quality is really, really solid. The standard equipment level is good. Everything is intuitive and easy to figure out. And I'm so glad they got rid of that stupid dial setup they had for the infotainment system on the last Genesis sedan.
Oh, but they still have a dial.
Mine doesn't have a dial.
Okay. You have like
mine doesn't even have a dial. Mine is a touchscreen, which is my only complaint. It's a little bit of a reach for the touchscreen.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like they did. It's both. Like you can use the touchscreen or you can use the dial in the one that I have. So
I don't have a dial.
Okay, so like after a week now, what's your sort of more tempered impression of it after living with it?
It's kind of the same thing. I mean, it's a good looking car and everything about it feels good. I think it's a huge improvement over the last generation Genesis, and I helped launch that car in a past job, so I'm really familiar. I've been driving it for years, and you know, to see this come along, the degree that Hyundai has improved is, you know, the last generation Genesis was a good first attempt, and this one is just a good car in general.
Yeah, I mean, see, that lines up kind of with what I felt like. The first time I drove this car, I was really impressed. You know, the old Genesis just drove like a big Hyundai. Like, it was kind of sloppy. It had a bunch of equipment, but none of it was – it didn't feel as premium as it should.
Totally.
Even though it was like a tremendous bargain. You know, this time around, they've actually paid a lot of attention to making it more rigid, taming the NVH. They brought in Lotus, they said, to – help tune the suspension. So they've done a lot of tricks. I mean, like I looked under hood, the strut towers or shock absorber housings on the front suspension, they went from like a multi-part steel structure to a cast aluminum piece. So it's stronger, it's lighter, and that's the kind of thing that you see under the hood of like Jaguars and stuff. So I'm impressed that they put the engineering into it, especially when, you know, mine is the 5-liter. I've got the ultimate package, so I've got like pretty much everything. There are no options.
What's your sticker price, Dan?
$55,700.
So we're talking almost $20,000 more.
Right, but
you're getting a V8. Is yours the H-Track?
Mine is
the all-wheel drive.
No, it's just rear-wheel drive.
Well, still, you're getting everything at that point if you've got the ultimate package on there.
Right, $55,700. And consider what it competes with. It competes with a 5 or a 7 series that costs another 20 more, right?
That's the thing. You almost can't look at the Germans because getting the same level equipment on them is going to bankrupt you. But, you know, from a handling perspective, you still have to – from a driver's perspective, you still have to look at them.
Yeah, and so that's sort of like – the first time I drove it, I was like, wow, this is quite a dynamic improvement. They did do a bunch of tuning and learning about how to make the chassis ride well and handle well. And I've got the adjustable shock absorbers. So I've got sport and eco and normal mode, which adjusts the response of the suspension. It's the initial impression is like, wow, this is really disciplined. It's really quite good. And it is, but it, after a week, like it floats around more than I'd like, but so does the 7 Series, too. I mean, it's just – it's a big car, and it's not exactly heavy at 4,100 or, you know, just over 4,000 pounds. That's not any more or less than a 300 weighs, and we all love that car.
I like the 300 rocks. I do. In fact, like the 300 – the 301 – last time we did a comparison between the Genesis sedan and the 300, I believe the 301. It was a few years ago.
Maybe I'll have to repeat that. I'd be really curious to compare.
Yeah, my issue now is I just think that, you know, I'm much more inclined to spend Brandis money than Dan money on, you know, I just would not spend $55,000 on the Genesis. I still don't think it's there. I think it's a good mid-40s car because you get a ton of equipment.
Have you driven it, Mike?
I drove it, but I drove it for about half an hour, never really knew the sticker price.
You know, here's the
and
other
I said,
thing.
This, and it's very, very comfortable. And the interior is really upscale.
That was probably the thing that impressed me the most was because the last interior looked pretty good, felt crappy.
This interior is astounding.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, the switchgear feels good. It makes the right clicks. It
feels solid.
When you press the buttons, it feels like you're pressing a real high quality button.
The buttons are like they've got a coating on them or like some kind of flocking, so they almost feel like soft to the touch, not shiny. Like they really put a lot of attention into the details on the 2015 Genesis to the point where I'm very impressed with the interior. I think that's
and the Koreans are killing it with content right now.
Yeah.
Absolutely slaying people.
Like in the past, like I would say that the last Genesis was like a Mercury, where this one is like full on luxury. It's got, you know, lots of comfort, lots of tech. It's not hard to use tech, but like it has, it's even connected to the cloud if you get the right package. I don't even remember what they call it now, but it's, you know, it's their thing that it connects you to all of the same kind of it's Blue Link, but it's like the cloud server setup. So there's the same kind of tech that you'd expect in, like, you know, again, Mercedes and Audi and BMW and all that stuff with Embrace and Connected Drive, and they've got it here in the Hyundai. So they're playing in a field that, like, they still don't have the brand cachet to do it for sure, but on the other hand, they have a lot of owner loyalty. More people buy their Hyundais than buy the German cars. So that says something. Like it's not like a social climber brand. It's more of like a, you know what you want, you know where you can get it, and you don't really care about the label.
And they have a killer warranty.
Yeah.
Great lease programs. And I believe the customers, the customer service is good. And it's the, you know, it's the not BMW, not Lexus. It's the anti, you know, what everybody else is doing. It's the anti crowd and peer pressure car.
Did you notice, Brandon, people like, cause I noticed people pay attention to this car.
You know, I ran through the drive through today and I saw a younger family, and the dad walked by the car, and he said to his, I heard him say to his wife, "What kind of Hyundai is that?" Because he walked by behind it, and he just saw the badge on there. And, you know, that's kind of the reaction that I got, is that a lot of people just didn't know what it was.
Yeah, it looks expensive.
Because the only Hyundai badge is on the rear deck, on the trunk. So... Right. You know, it's very, very discreet in that regard. I personally think they should just take the Hyundai badge off altogether and just badge it as a Genesis. But
a lot of guys say that the very first generation when they came out, they just debadged it.
Well, the first gen was so anonymous. Like, that could have been any car.
Yeah.
That was like the insurance company car. This one looks expensive. Like I love
the front end on this one. Yeah. I just think it looks great. That big... broad muscular grill and the headlights, it all looks really, really classy.
Yeah, I saw more people like craning their neck to figure out what the hell this thing is, because it looks like those expensive Germans.
The last boring car I was in that got this much attention was the MKZ.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know what that says. They've done a very, very good job on the 2015 Genesis. Although the electronics didn't pair with my phone. Completely refused to pair with my phone.
What kind of phone do you have?
I have a Samsung.
Well, there's your first mistake.
Well,
wow, I have a Samsung also.
I've got an iPhone and I had zero issues.
Yeah, I generally have no issues pairing. And it may be that there's like a software upgrade that is available that I haven't done yet on my phone because I rooted it. So I don't want to...
That could be what it is. I mean...
Yeah, and it could be. It. So I'll be fair.
I'll but jailbreak mine before tomorrow morning and see if that affects it.
I generally don't have a problem. So...
Just screw up your phone for science.
Yeah. It's like it's not quite as good as I wish it was, but it's a very good car. And by the way, the 5-liter... ridiculous. Awesome engine.
Paukert and Steve had one up in the office up here and they were playing with it, and that was all they said was the 5-liter was really, really impressive.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna have to get into one of those at some point.
And that was the big engine last year, which is now standard.
Yep. Yeah, that was the R-Spec engine last year.
Right.
Yeah. It
which was a kick butt engine.
It does not lack for power, and it's quiet in this thing, and just, I mean, overall, and Hyundai said when they came to the thing, like, they're probably not making money on these at this price point. But they kind of don't care because it's serving
as a halo. I think the profit is in something not related to dollars here.
Right.
You know, I think they're earning a lot more than money with every Genesis that they sell.
Yeah, I'll agree with that, and I think that's part of the plan, and the money will come later. Although, the funny thing is, too, like now that they've done the Genesis over, it makes the Equus look like a piece of junk, too, so they got to get on that one.
That's the other problem.
Never been.
And the K900, I believe, is still in the old platform as well.
I'm really curious about that one. I still haven't driven that yet.
So, I was supposed to get one, and someone broke the windshield the day before I got it.
Jeez, so you had to...
Is that not the worst sensation, just getting that phone call? Yeah, we're not bringing you your car today.
Well, you know what time the call is going to come, and when it comes
4:00 outside, in the afternoon.
Yeah, when the call comes outside or too late, you're like, something's going down.
Yep.
Our guys crashed it on the way there.
It's happened before.
I know.
I was actually, when I in my old job delivering press cars, I was delivering a car to former Autoblog editor John Neff. And I was a mile from his house, and I was rear-ended by my coworker.
That's bad. That's very bad.
It was funny at the time.
sure John wasn't laughing. He had no way to get to Subway that day.
Well, no. It was drivable, but the funny thing was we drove all the way from Detroit to Cleveland and got a mile from his house and crashed it.
That is kind of amusing.
What kind of car was it?
It was an Evo, actually.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is such a NEF car, so.
Yeah, sort of. I don't. He was
except
he,
not at all.
Yeah. So we finished up with the Genesis. Do we want to talk the Infiniti Eau Rouge? Because Mike, you were over there, or we can jump straight into Lincoln. But I feel like really we should talk about the Infiniti.
I think we should talk about the Eau Rouge to discuss exactly what it is and what it isn't, because some of the readers still seem a little confused.
Is it red water, really?
I've heard worse, actually. So basically, in a nutshell, Infiniti launched the Eau Rouge, Eau Rouge, however you pronounce it, concept car, which that was launched at the Detroit Auto Show. And believe it or not, the car on the stand did not really have an engine, and they really didn't even know if the Infiniti GTR engine was going to fit. Nissan GTR engine was going to fit. So they basically at that show stated it'll have between 500 and 600 horsepower, and they really didn't know. But secretly behind the scenes, late last year they started working on the Eau Rouge prototype, which is the working model. And basically they took a Q50S, donor car, a U.S. spec car in Europe, in London, and dropped the powertrain, or as much as they could have, of the GTR's powertrain beneath it. Obviously the GTR has a six-speed DCT. That's correct. It's a six-speed DCT with a transaxle.
They call that the rattle box.
It's super rattly, but it's got a six-speed DCT with a transaxle, and that's not going to fit under the rear end of the Q50. So they put the Q56s, whatever that is, the Q70-56, whatever they call it.
Commissioner Gordon calling you right now? What is that?
I don't know. I got too many phones in this room. So they put the transmission that handles the 5.6-liter V8 on the back of the engine. And so it's a Nissan GTR engine with a wet 7-speed automatic running through Infiniti's intelligent all-wheel drive system, not the GTR's all-wheel drive system. Remember, this is a prototype. This is just a running mule to see, you know, what would really happen. You know, how is this engine going to move around, you know, a sedan that weighs 4,000 pounds?
So it's a Q50 with, like, the M56 running gear, basically.
Well, yeah. Yeah, with the GTR's engine.
Right. That's
and the GTR's brakes. And special forged alloy wheels and big sticky tires and an aero kit inspired by Infiniti F1 Red Bull Racing and a bunch of go-fast little mechanical stuff. A custom exhaust that runs out, you know, two dual pipe runs literally, you know, three into the back straight out instead of having to cross over like the GTR has. Long story short, thing makes about 560 horsepower, does 0 to 60 in less than 4 seconds, and hauls butt. And it's a ton of fun. And I had it on the track and outside London at a proving grounds. And it was a real hoot. It's still a prototype. It had a lot of clunks, a lot of just a little things that need to be worked out. But that's to be expected. Crazy fast. And I'm killing. I mean, I'm dying for Infiniti to make this thing. They need this car in the worst possible way. They need a flagship. They need something to make them stand out. And so that was the gist of it.
I thought that was the all of their new naming that's going to make them stand out.
You know, I gave him a bunch of hell for that. I kept joking. Wow, this is almost as radical as naming all your lineup. And the funny thing is watching the Infiniti people trip over the names. Well, this is really a G37S. No, it's a Q50. The transmission came from the M56. Well, hang on. That's the Q70 5.6. And it's pretty funny.
You know, that dovetails nicely with our next topic, which is Lincoln.
Dun, 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 dun. Oh, man.
Kind of, because...
Does anyone else get sad when they think about Lincoln? Because that's... My attitude just changed the minute
you brought this up. Well, you shouldn't get sad, though, because things are looking up for Lincoln. But here's the tie-in with Infinity, right? Because Infinity just gave up their guy to Cadillac. So Lincoln, not to be outdone, was like, well, we're going to have a new boss, too. So they just named... And this is the first time that Lincoln has really had... A boss in a very long time, if maybe ever. I kind of forget when the last time there was somebody in charge of Lincoln other than like Edsel Ford or Henry Leland. But they just named I'm going to mangle his name, but Kumar Galhotra as their president of Lincoln, and so. Hopefully he won't just decide to rename all the stuff. I expect Cadillacs to be completely renamed by Johann Denischen and like...
Oh, in a heartbeat.
Yeah, because that's what he does. That's
they're all going to be like, they'll all start with R's or L's or something. L, we need an L.
An line. L? But see, like Cadillac, I mean, I guess Cadillac, now we've sort of figured out what all the cars are. Lincoln is just as confusing as Infiniti with like, is it an MKZ? Is it an MKX? Is it an MK... Like, I don't know. Maybe we're starting to get a little more comfortable with that. But, so really, I guess the big deal is that Lincoln now has somebody in charge other than Jim Farley, who was sort of splitting his time between Ford and Lincoln. And he had to make Ford successful. So Lincoln kind of withered a little bit, even though he did a few things to get Lincoln sort of moving again. But it kind of... The news was kind of weird because did you guys read the press release? It seemed like they sort of like buried it down in this like, this guy's retiring. This other guy is being vice president. Oh, yeah, and we put a boss in charge of Lincoln. And but like that seemed weird to me. Like they really downplayed it.
I think that's just kind of a thing with Lincoln in general.
Yeah, but I think that in my opinion that Lincoln, the U.S. market isn't important to Lincoln anymore. You know, we see Lincoln dying here, but in other markets, Lincoln is thriving.
Which markets would that be?
What's it say? Overseas, China, right?
Well, I thought they were trying to build in China. I didn't know how well they're doing.
I mean, this is all global. I think the message most Americans, including myself, seem to keep forgetting is that there's a whole rest of the world that's opening up for emerging markets for cars, and that Lincoln, you know, doesn't have to be in everyone's driveway in the States. You know, what is it? GM selling more cars in China than they're selling in the States or something like that? What is it? I think there's a stat. I'm not going to stick to that.
Close enough.
No, I believe it's Cadillac selling more cars outside, you know, the United States than they are inside the U.S. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Lincoln becoming a strong brand in China, in Russia, in the Middle East, and, you know, screw the North American market. Look at the new guy now in charge to grow this thing. He is an engineer, which is good. And he's worked.
Like, it is. I don't know. I mean... I'm not sure whether that's good or whether, like, it's almost like, does Ford really need a product? I guess they have a product guy in Fields, though, right?
Hang on, I'm trying to figure out, where did he come from?
He came from Asia.
Okay, Asia, Pacific, and Africa regions.
Right, so he knows where they're trying to grow. And right. So, I think that background will actually help them grow in Asia and the regions that are not the North American market.
I personally think Lincoln is dead in the U.S. I mean, I've yet to see anything that really impresses me with that brand. But if I was on the board of directors at Ford and said, you got to do something with Lincoln, I'd say, you know what, let's focus on other markets.
I drew a pretty spiffy idea for a Lincoln today. I thought it would be nice.
You drew it?
Yeah, I was in a meeting.
How does it help us in a podcast?
It doesn't help us at all, and I'm not going to share
it. Draw us a picture visually. Describe it.
It was a little squared off. Had kind of a reverse cut nose. But it had this really cool swage line that went around the front, and then it would flatten out to... Yeah.
So it looked like a Cadillac.
No, it didn't look like a Cadillac. It was almost like clean like an Audi, but it wasn't... I didn't crib Audi lines. I was very proud of it. And then I
you now must post the picture.
We'll talk about
that'll be on our Facebook page.
The other day, like last week, I was in a last week I was in a meeting, and all of a sudden I looked down. And I'm like, oh, I drew a Pontiac. I didn't even mean to. Cut that one around somewhere.
I miss working in an office where I doodled all day long.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, and it's not that I'm being disrespectful. It just honestly, it helps me listen.
No, never, never.
I can be disrespectful actively. I don't need to passively disrespect people. But it seems like they've got the, I guess they've got the product guy with Mark Fields over all of Ford, especially in the U.S. So I guess bringing in an engineer with knowledge of the Asian market might be good. It almost seems like really the guy behind the whole thing is Fields, because didn't Mullally say he was going to almost kill off Lincoln like last year?
I would agree. Oh. I would say yes. I wish he would have. I'm not a huge fan of Lincoln.
Well, but so here's the thing. Like, if they make it, if they make it another couple of years, right? I think they're testing. I think they're going to say, how does it do in China? How can, what kind of traction can we get? And if they get traction, I would expect to see a bunch more money put into Lincoln. And if the Chinese market doesn't take off for them, I'd expect them to just, you know, Lincoln will not be down for breakfast. And I still don't think that they're going to get a Mustang platform car until they sell lots and lots of stuff. Maybe by like 2020, if they're still around, they might get a Mustang platform.
There is no way they're going to get a Mustang platform car in the near future.
But wouldn't that be awesome?
It would have been awesome. A follow-up to the LS would have been nice. They blew it.
So did you guys like the LS?
I did.
I did not like the LS, but I was hopeful for a second generation LS. I like the Lincoln LSC. Remember that monster?
Yeah, the LSC was a Mustang.
Yeah, that was badass. But that was back in the 80s.
Yeah, that was the Mark 7, and it was...
And I think it weighed like 9,000 pounds.
I mean, it actually... The heaviest car. Honestly, I bet that car was under 4,000 pounds. I bet it was like 3,500 pounds. Because it was a Fox body. It wasn't really that big. It wasn't that heavy. And it had the 5-liter. And yeah. So they could do that again. They could come out with another LSC, and wouldn't that be cool? Probably not going to happen.
Wow. Guess what its curb weight was?
It was 3,450.
37.
37? Wow, it was heavy.
Wow.
Had air shocks.
That's crazy light. Yeah. That was the Lincoln Mark
7. That's not crazy light. That was heavy back in the day. Think about what an Escort weighed.
Anyway, that was a cool car. Any LSCs running around today are riding on the curbs because their air shocks are all blown out. But
they've got the lowrider stuff in them, and they're on dubs.
Lowrider.
Or much larger things. You probably have never seen a stanced Lincoln, have you?
There's got to be one out there.
Yeah.
Long pause.
Yeah, I know. Guess we rack our brains. Sorry, just don't drive it to Quebec. They outlawed it. All right.
Where were we?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those like, well, it remains to be seen sort of things, but like Lincoln has somebody in charge now, so that's sort of like a seal of approval in terms of like, hey, go get this done. I think they're either going to be done in 3 years or they're going to be impressively reborn in 3 years. That's my prediction. Anybody want to disagree? All right, I win.
No.
The Autoblog Podcast is brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. Speaking of brands that are kind of touched by Jim Farley, that didn't sound good, but you know, another one of his pieces of handiwork was Scion.
Is this a transition?
It is a transition, and I just like
segue.
I got very, very crossed up in my. I was trying. I was reaching. Hey, you know.
Carriage brake, enter, return.
It's kind of the charm of the podcast, right? The
So where are we going? The fact that Scion XP and IQ are ending?
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on at Scion. Yeah, the XP is finally dying because I'm no fan of the XP.
I'm not going to miss it.
Yeah.
I would not know it if it disappeared. I'm sorry.
It's already dead. Already dead to me.
Why do we even run that story?
Well, because
that was just a waste. Just a waste of computer space. Where's the damn thing? Chris Bruce, I'm angry. Right? Don't cover cars that don't matter.
Well, I mean, let's look at what's dying.
Wait, my phone's ringing. Scion's calling, yelling at me.
No, it's Chris. The IQ is also dying, so that means no more Signets.
I thought they discontinued the Signet already.
They did
a couple of years ago.
No longer the possibility for any Signets ever.
Because I hated the Signet as well.
Of course you did, because it's like the old Volkswagen Bugs with that like fiberglass nose that made him look like a Rolls, kind of, sort of. It's insulting to people. It's like, no, that's nothing.
I also did not like the IQ.
I was surprised by the IQ, how it would clip along on the freeway at about 80 miles an hour and not really mind.
Yeah, I didn't like because I could touch the back window. I didn't like touching the back window from the driver's seat.
Yeah, oh yeah, the imminent death from semi.
I could lean back and touch the back window, and that to me was too close.
Really?
I didn't like it. I had a little orange one, and I had it for a couple days, and I gave it back.
You don't like small cars like that, Mike? You don't find that thrilling?
I can handle small cars. I just don't like feeling like I'm going to die. Hmm. And let's see, how do I put this nicely without getting sued? There is a perception of safety. When I was in a carbon fiber McLaren, which is half as high off the ground and very small as well,
I bet felt you could like touch the back window safe. In that thing.
Yeah, but I was very safe. I felt very, very comfortable. For some reason, the IQ just felt
flimsy? Is flimsy the word you're looking for?
Insubstantial. Unsubstantial. I mean, it just didn't have the mass I was looking for, especially in L.A. I mean, if I lived in downtown Rome, if I lived in Budapest, if I lived in Moscow, I wasn't bulletproof. You know, it just depends. But, you know, it's for a city car, fine. Downtown New York, great. Put heavy-duty bumpers on it, I'm there. But just in L.A. where we need bigger cars because people drive and text and don't even pay attention.
You think that doesn't happen in, like, New York?
Is it legal?
Legal or not, it probably happens quite a bit.
Yeah. I'm not a Scion IQ guy. Ask Steve Ewan. He'd laugh hysterically.
I should give you one. I guess backing up to the actual news here is that Scion has big changes going on because they thought for a while they were going to actually make Scion into a near luxury brand sort of in between Toyota and Lexus. And then they came to their senses and they were like, no, that's stupid. So now they're going to continue Scion as what it is, sort of a less expensive, quirkier offering to Toyota. And they filed a bunch of trademark applications for names like IAID, IM, TD, TK, TR, TS, TZ. So those could be the models we see. Probably not going to see all of them. The XB is going to get replaced by the Auris hatchback. Have you seen the Auris hatchback?
I haven't seen it in person, but looking at the pictures, it's Corolla wagon.
Yeah, but isn't it cool looking?
It's attractive. I like it. I mean, it looks good. It's probably going to be terribly boring to drive. Well, but
I was like, huh, that looks darn good. And then the
thing is this going to be a straight port, or is this going to be, you know, let's add a Scion fascia to it, and a Scion rear end, and you know, the only parts that are actually the Auris are in the middle.
I don't know. I mean, I could see that face being a Scion. It's not that much different than like the TC. Which is kind of an Avensis anyway, so it's like they're basically grabbing some of the lineup that doesn't make it over to the States in other ways and bring them here as Scions, and I guess it's okay. The thing, I looked it up on What Car, and their quick sort of take on it was that, like, it's affordable. It's also very... There they are. It's very dull to drive.
Mike, you're so popular.
Oh man,
that's an old school phone now. It's dull to drive, and the interior isn't as nice as it could be. So there's just better cars in the class, which, I mean, for all intents and purposes, could be used to describe every Scion.
Yeah.
Right now, so it looks good. I don't know that it's going to be any better. And there's a couple of other things that are still going to happen. We're going to definitely get another generation of the FRS, which is cool. And the XD is dying, so they can bring us a Mazda 2. That's a weirder one, that they're actually bringing a version of the Mazda 2 in a sedan.
On the Mazda, right. That's.
And Toyota is going to get the hatch version of the Mazda 2. So I'm still confused about how they've positioned Scion, because you would think that it would get the hatch and the sedan, and Toyota wouldn't need those because they could just point over at Scion and be like, oh, you can get them over there. So it's still a weird brand to me. And they're going to do a crossover, because that's what we need.
Crossovers are hot right now.
More crossovers.
But it'll be a Corolla Auris crossover, which actually could be pretty cool.
All the crossovers.
I mean, it almost.
I'm more excited about the next bit of news that you haven't hit yet.
Yeah.
What's that? Why don't you tee it up?
Keep rolling.
No, go ahead. Tee it up.
The FRS second generation and BRZ, they're working on those.
Well, I mentioned it. What do we know about it? Do you know something that.
We don't know about it, but remember, it's pretty much everyone knows that the sales are not, they're not going through the roof, but it's nice to know that the automaker, the sales are confident enough that they're going to go with the second generation. So,
yeah, maybe they can put some real power into it.
Yeah, it still drives well.
It drives okay.
I like the cars. I like the FRS and the BRZ.
It
needs a little punch.
It's not even that. It needs better tires because it's got those greasy
Prius tires.
No, I guess they're not really Prius tires. They're just greasy tires. I don't know. I drove an FRS and then I drove a Miata, and I was like,
"Oh, come on! The Miata's so much better."
Yeah, exactly. The Miata is all of the things
that
I wish
the FRS was. Did you think I wasn't going to say that?
I didn't know where you were going.
The Miata's been around since what, 1990,
1989? I don't care.
So damn good.
Yeah, I don't even care that the current Miata is old now. Still really good. And I don't even care that it's a convertible, and I don't like convertibles that much. It's still.
I don't like convertibles either, and I don't like really small double cars either, but the Miata gets an exception.
Yeah. And there's no.
Brandon, what do you think of the Miata? Dish it. Pan it. Come on.
Why would I pan the Miata?
Oh, he likes it. See?
Everyone likes the Miata.
You know who doesn't like the Miata? People haven't driven the Miata.
If we weren't secretly being paid by Ford to promote the Focus or Fiesta ST, which we're not being secretly paid by Ford to promote the Fiesta ST. But if it weren't for that, the answer would always be a Miata. I love the Miata.
Well, I kind of disagree with that, but I mean, I do think it is an outstanding car.
The answer is not always a Miata, a family of four going to dinner, or it's thunderstorms or snow. The answer is quite often Miata.
Maybe I would totally rock a Miata in the snow with snow tires.
For the record, I have driven a Miata with the top down all 12 months of the year in Detroit, so it is possible.
For the record, I haven't driven a car in the snow in years, so.
Driving in the snow is the bomb. You should come up here.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
Especially this.
We'll do a live podcast in January.
We should get a Fiesta ST in the snow.
In a snowy parking lot?
That would be hilarious. Yeah, because they really like to sort of rotate when you lift off the throttle in the middle of a corner, kind of like a Porsche 930, but not really, because you won't die. yeah, we're totally off track. Maybe they can figure out some way to at least recalibrate the engine in the FRS so it doesn't have that giant flat spot in the middle, and. Maybe I'll like it better.
I feel like everyone's issues with the FRS just stem from its lack of power. Like if it just had another 30 horsepower, everyone would be madly in love.
All
with
it needs it. Is it'd a be fun. Freaking turbocharger. All it
supercharger.
Needs.
Supercharger.
Supercharger. Supercharger. Yeah. Because why?
Right. And supercharger. You don't need to explain supercharger love. I gotcha. And let's move on. let's just talk about another supercharged car, the Dodge Charger SRT Hellcat, that's coming.
That's a bad boy.
Yeah, man. 707 horsepower. Which, let's not focus on that, though, because what did we learn about the Hellcat Challenger? It's not this, like, you'd think a Challenger with 700 horsepower, like, all you would do is just melt the tires all day, but it's kind of just like a Challenger Plus, right? It's like Challenger with more. It's still the Challenger we all know and love, which I think is cool. And that apparently is the end of it.
No, I think it's cool.
Obviously,
it's
untrue.
But people have to remember that this is an exercise in badassery horsepower. This is not, they're not building the world's greatest sports sedan. They're building the world's greatest throwback muscle car. You know, I think it's kick butt and it's cool, and it's a great accolade. And SRT does power well. And so these are definitely the guys to do it.
I think it's wholly unnecessary, and the country lanes of America are going to be lined with Charger and Challenger drivers with more money than talent.
I think that's okay.
It's always been that way.
You know what? I think that's okay.
But this is ridiculous. It's 700 plus horsepower.
Yeah, but it's only 650 feet-pounds of torque, so it's not really that much.
And what's it weigh?
A million pounds.
Okay,
come on. It'd have to weigh a million pounds for that.
But the Queen Mary has 10 zillion horsepower, but it doesn't make it fast. I mean, just because you have a lot of horsepower.
I don't know, man. The Queen Mary, she can throw a rooster tail when you go full ahead, man. That's no joke.
All I'm saying is that it's so much power for so little money. And at what point are we going to look at it and say, you know, this is a really bad idea. I mean, it was one thing.
By the way, the Queen Mary has 160,000 horsepower.
Right. What's her top?
And what's it displaced? 100,000 tons?
A lot.
Oh, man, that sucks. 81,000 gross tons.
Right. So all I'm saying is we said, you know, the GT 500 came along with 662 horsepower. It was like $60,000. Yep. Now we have, what, 707 horsepower for roughly the same amount of money. At what point are we going to decide that this is really, really stupid?
This is going to be a niche car.
Oh, right? Totally.
It's not going to be totally.
And I don't expect them to be building a million and one of them and be able to pick them up with, you know, easy financing and a 2-year lease kind of deal. They're going to be maybe 500 or 600 of them or some nonsense like that. It's going to be a very low number, but it's too pointless of a car for me to really get behind.
Even the Charger with the four doors and stuff, like,
come on. Too pointless to get behind. Okay, so when the loan calls up for you, I'll take it.
It doesn't mean I'm not going to, you're probably going to get it anyways.
I think it's a niche car, and it's a cool car. It's a halo car. It'll be good for the Charger lineup. It's ridiculously stupid, Brandon. I agree with you. It is absolutely bordering on asinine, but it's so cool.
I would get behind the Hellcat a lot more willingly if it were in a certain snake-named car.
Oh, I would, yeah.
A big, stupid muscle car.
I would get behind that, too.
But that can't happen because we can't step on the Italian's toes.
Well, I think also, and the other thing they say is, like, well, it's heavier. It's like 180 pounds heavier than the V10. Yeah, big deal. It's also got a much fatter power band because supercharger. Oh, and the engine won't fit under the hood, so cut a hole in it.
Yeah.
You know, like,
is there something inherently wrong with the Viper with a big hood scoop?
Right. So I think, honestly, it would steal all the thunder from the V10.
I don't think it's that I have the issue so much with the power as the platform that they're shoehorning all that power into. Is really what it comes to.
But I think the platform can handle it.
It's a good chassis.
It's at the margin of what it can handle. Like, it's gonna feel edgy. But
Angry that this engine isn't under the hood of the Viper?
I think it would rock under the hood of the Viper.
You know, the Viper would do so much better with a V8. I'll be the first guy to say that. The most disappointing thing in the part of the Viper is the fact that they are, unfortunately, they think they're in a rut of having to deliver V10s. And it would rock with a Hellcat V8. So.
Well, the Viper V10 has more torque. More peak torque.
Yeah, but how much heavier is it?
It's lighter. The Viper V10 is lighter than the Hellcat. So it's by like almost a couple hundred pounds. So you've got a longer engine, but it's lighter, so it can nestle back. It's also not as tall, so the center of gravity. Like, there are reasons, and they're like legitimate reasons that this engine is not a direct sort of shoe-in for the Viper.
Yeah, I want a Viper with a lightweight V8.
Yeah.
A high Revian lightweight V8.
I would be happy with a Viper with a PowerTech 4.7. With all of its like 230 horsepower. Who cares? It's like.
So what is the weight of the Challenger SRT? I'm looking it up right now.
I'm going to say it's like
43. Yeah, where's Seth's drive?
It's a lot.
Like 4,200?
I was going to say 4,300. It's they're not light cars. I think that's part of the reason why they can absorb this much horsepower, you know, and kind of blunt what would be ridiculous otherwise.
About 4,200 pounds.
4,200 pounds. So that's a lot of car. And they handle really well. Even just like the regular Challenger RT, that's a car that can hang. Like, it's not a bad chassis.
I think we should qualify what handling really well means.
I mean, it depends on what you're doing.
The Challenger has never been, you know, a first choice for a handling car. It's not even been a first choice for a handling muscle car. It's easily the worst handling muscle car of the group.
I'm like a tight autocross, yeah. I'll give you that. But
in general. All
right. I feel like it handles pretty well. I think probably a Mustang's going to kill everything else in the class. But
Mustang, Camaro, then Challenger.
Yeah, okay. I won't disagree with that.
It's always been that way.
Yeah.
Camaro Z28 kicks butt, but once again, like a Hellcat, it's such a limited volume, you know, car.
And the Z28 is like, that's hardcore, where like a Hellcat
Challenger. Yeah, Z28's a race car. Right. Yeah. This is more like a muscle car. Like
this is a ZL1 competitor.
Right.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I think it's great that they're doing it because I like ridiculous horsepower in cars. It's totally unnecessary. I think if a few people remove themselves from the gene pool, as long as they don't I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say as long as they don't take anybody else out. And then I realize
Challenger, also known as the Darwin device.
Yeah, it's that was a joke, folks. For those of you with very little sense of humor, it was a joke. I have a dark sense of humor. I make dark jokes. Get over it. Move on. Send us email to podcast@autoblog.com and let me know that you don't appreciate the dark jokes, and I'll try to learn some riddles. So what else do you think this engine should be in there?
And the phones are lighting up.
Right. There's your Commissioner Gordon phone.
I think this engine should be in the Dodge Journey.
I think they're doing an SRT Journey, which I'm totally taking credit for.
No, that was a joke. That would be awesome, though. It'd be completely ridiculous.
In the middle of a journey.
I put it in a Wrangler.
A Wrangler?
I don't think it'll...
It would not be good in a Wrangler.
If we're talking...
Badass. You just idle up every hill.
If we're talking like absolute, you know, bananas, unnecessary, it needs to go in a Ram.
I could see it in a Ram. I mean,
it needs to go in a Ram 1500. We need an SRT8 Dart. Ram.
Dart.
Yeah, like it an weighs old as Dart.
The Dart.
An old Dart. An original Dart.
maybe if we cleaved the Hellcat in half and put it in the Dart, that would work.
I mean, if you're gonna put it in any of those small cars, you got to put it in the middle. It's like the old Shogun, right? That had the SHO engine in the middle, because that was cool.
But seriously, I think the Ram is the next logical place for this engine to go after the Charger.
I would actually expect it to be in the Ram at some point.
Yeah, I think it's the obvious direction for them to go, especially because they I don't think they're doing another 300 SRT8, right?
I'm sure that they will do some. special version of whatever replaces the 300 when it finally ends its ridiculously long model run.
By the way, I think once you have the Challenger and the Charger with the Hellcat, I think Ram is the next direction to go, and then maybe the Grand Cherokee.
Oh yeah, I think it would have been, Ram and Grand Cherokee are probably the two best candidates because they both have. I mean, there wasn't SRT Ram, but.
No, there was. There was the SRT 10 Ram.
Right, but I mean, it's not like the that was a long time ago now.
Yeah, there hasn't been a recent SRT Ram.
Right. Not like the SRT Cherokee, which was the fastest SRT vehicle, if you recall. Or quickest, if we want to split hairs. It was quickest.
Quickest.
So, I mean, I would not mind 650 horsepower in my own personal Grand Cherokee. That would be just fine with me. Because there are times when I climb an on-ramp with a full load of passengers and stuff in it, and I'm like, I should have got the Hemi. So
you have 3.6?
Yeah, with the 5-speed.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you're 2012, 2013?
13. And it's fine. Like, honestly, that's really the only time that you sort of notice, and you just plan, and you're fine. But I wouldn't want to feed a Hemi on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But, man... 650 horsepower might have changed my mind. I might have gone all in for all the financing, every last drop of financing for that. And then I would have had to put gas in it. I'd be poor. So, yeah, I think that they're probably going to put this in some other things, but I'm very pleased that you can now get four doors with 700 horsepower instead of just two. And it does, like, it serves to actually extend the Charger. I didn't think there'd be a third refresh on the chart, or a second refresh on it, to make it a third generation. So I mean, it's like, how long can they play this one car out? So put 700 horsepower in it, make a new Halo model, all of a sudden you get another year. That's my prediction. And so with that, we should talk about things that are not going to get another year. There are cars that are not going to make it past 2014, and I can't say that I'm very sorry to see really any of these go.
I disagree. There's a few that I'm kind of sad about.
Which ones?
Well, let's the obvious one, CTS-V wagon.
But a new one will come out.
Acura TL.
I like the TL.
TL all-wheel drive.
I'm going to drive the TLX in 48 hours.
The TLX?
It sounds like you're getting telexes already in your office.
I'm going to drive the TLX on Wednesday. I'm going to drive. So I'll drive it on Thursday. I'm sure there's an embargo and I can't talk about it till like August 19th or something, but we'll see.
FJ Cruiser is disappointing that that's going away. I mean, I understand.
That was a cult car, not a volume car.
It was always kind of fun.
It was a 4Runner.
That you couldn't see out of.
Yeah. But it had what?
Three windshield wipers, yeah.
That's anytime Toyota ups the wiper count, you know. I mean, like the old Camry wagon. That's
two in the back. That was bad.
Right? The weirdest space egg wagon styling of the 90s. Taurus.
I will say I'm surprised that it made it this long, not that it's finally being killed. The absolutely horrible Volkswagen Routan.
Well, the Routan, I think they needed a van in their showrooms, and believe it or not, like, people bought them.
God, that thing was terrible.
Well, did you feel that way about the Caravan?
No, it wasn't that the Caravan was bad. It was that it was a bad piece of badge engineering. Really what my issue was.
Routan sucked.
There was nothing wrong with the vehicle itself, but it was just a very bad Volkswagen.
So you just didn't like the pretense?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
You know, wasn't it built because the factory was empty and was looking for something to do?
I don't remember the exact circumstances.
I believe the reason was the factory, Chrysler didn't need the factory, so they said, hey, Volkswagen says, we can use a minivan. And they just did it.
Well, I think that worked out fortuitously for both of them, right? Like, Chrysler needed to keep its factory running, and Volkswagen wanted a van for the U.S.
Begs the question, do the people that are in there working wearing Chrysler shirts, all of a sudden they hand out Volkswagen shirts the next day and they go, hey, we got a new job? Or does Volkswagen bring in all new people? What happened? What happened?
I don't know. Which plant what was that? Does was that happen? Was that Brampton?
You're asking me. I don't even live near the place.
I figured Brandon might know because you guys know everything.
I feel like it is.
Brandon knows everything.
I do know everything.
So Brampton was actually a very modern plant. Like that was the plant that Brampton was built by Renault when they owned American Motors. In like 1986 or 87, that plant opened, and that built the Eagle Premier, and then all the Chrysler LH cars. So that was one of the things that Chrysler got as the spoils of that deal. I mean, the Rutan wasn't that bad, really. It was just a caravan.
It was not a Volkswagen-ish car.
Well, I mean,
it sucked. I like Chrysler better.
It sucks compared to what? Compared to the Eurovan? I'd rather have a.
It was built in the Eurovan,
and I also like the Beetle. The Volkswagen Concept that they've pulled out a couple times.
The Bully.
They pulled it out twice.
Yeah, well, they had two different versions. One was large, one was small, and the Rutan was built in Windsor.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it. Just came to that.
Right.
Brampton is the
LX.
Right.
Right, which makes sense because the LH cars were, right, so it goes Premier, LH, LX. Right, so nobody cares that I have that kind of knowledge in my head.
You're fast. What's the average weight of a guinea pig?
Fully laden or, you know.
Well, I was just going to say, the airspeed velocity.
African swallow or European? What? Sorry, I watched that so many times in high school. Great. All right, so we can agree to disagree about the Rutan. I think it was a fine van for the people that wanted a Volkswagen.
Thumbs down. But you know what? We outvote you. Sorry, Dan.
I mean, that's fine.
That's it. We've just canceled the Rutan.
You know what, though? You know what was worse than those? The light hybrid Chevys.
Oh, I'm not going to miss those.
Nobody even knew they were around.
I didn't know that there was a light hybrid Impala until just now.
I had no idea until 1 minute ago.
Yeah, I did not know until I read this story, but when I was getting ready for the podcast.
Yeah, that was a definite who knew moment. I mean, it was just I was like, really?
Mike, are you going to miss the Gallardo?
No, because it's getting replaced by something better.
I feel like you can't get
they've
really
sold
upset
so
about
many of those
getting replaced. Yeah. Like I'd be upset about the ISF, but it's being replaced by the RC.
I believe the Gallardo is their
Camry.
Highest volume Lamborghini of all time.
Yeah, because it was not that expensive. Over
14,000 being built. That's crazy. 14,000 Lambos.
So you know what that does for resale on those? It craters the resale.
Yes.
Good. That's, so we can pick up a used Gallardo for like, you know,
Bring a trailer has one for $4,900 right now. I'm kidding.
That's going to be. So you're just going to find like a bunch of basket case Gallardos in, you know, 20 years.
Pick up a Gallardo parts car.
Yeah.
I think one of the ones on here that I'm really kind of interested by is the Volvo XC90. Because that's a car that's been around forever.
That car came out in 2003.
I graduated from high school in 2003.
Man, I feel old now. I was 25 in 2003. Thank you very much.
I was 68 back then.
Yeah, I know. Mike, hey, you're going to need to leave your teeth in if you're going to have dinner after the podcast, okay?
But I mean, that's saying something like that. That thing has lasted as long as it has.
And it just aced.
It's been good.
Yeah, it just aced the small overlap, right?
Yeah, it's a TSP Plus.
Right. So, I mean, but you get in that thing and you're like, wow, this is old. It's quaint. And it wasn't a bad car. And I mean,
it still drives nicely.
Yeah, it drives okay. It drives old now. But it's the new XC. See, that's the thing. Like, a lot of these things that are being replaced have something to replace them. Some of them are just straight up dying, like the Murano Cross Cab. But the XC90, there's a new XC90 coming.
Yes. So, very soon, actually. Should be next month, I feel like.
Right, and it's going to have the... Have you driven anything with the new Drive-E, the twin-charged?
No, I'm actually... The XC90 is one of the cars I'm most excited about driving in, like, the next year or so.
That's going to be really
good. I have no idea when I'm driving it, so don't... think that I'm going to have a review for you guys soon. But it's I'm really, really intrigued by it.
Well, it marks the debut of their scalable product architecture, which will be good. You know, I think it's sort of this is where Geely gets to show what their investment in Volvo is going to start to pay off like. Because right now, all the Volvos we've got are these are all the Ford Volvos that were developed. And so now we're starting to see them.
A decade ago or more. That XC90 is so damn old.
That XC90 was developed in the 90s. That was, yeah, that was
I had an XC90. One of my kids came home in an XC90 from the hospital, and he's now like gone off to college. Yeah. I mean, that car is so damn old.
Yeah. I've been fixing the transmission on my P2, which is sort of related to the XC90. They're both on the same platform. So I feel a real connection with these cars. Maybe they can figure out how to put an automatic that doesn't blow up in their newer cars.
Our XC90 was a huge lemon.
You had a V8, right?
Yeah.
So it was a Yamaha V8, wasn't it?
Yeah, Yamaha Source V8.
B844S.
Yeah. And
did it break its cam things? It's cam.
It broke everything. Yeah. It just sucked. And it angered me because the all-wheel drive system. I said, oh, it'll be all-wheel drive. I got a V8. And you step on the gas, and the front wheels would spin, and then the back wheels would hook up. Nothing's more frustrating than peeling out, you know, trying to leave a parking lot on the wet, and you floor it, and the front wheels peel out.
Yep. But they still do that, though. Any of the Polestar, I drove a Polestar X.
It's not a good feature.
No, it's just it's a reactive all-wheel drive system. And it's weird because it's Haldex, and, you know, Saab had pretty much the same system, and that's this thing that's under like Buicks and stuff now. The Regal Turbo has a Haldex all-wheel drive. It doesn't really do that. It works just fine. So it's the way they've calibrated it.
The new ones, they can preload the rear axle under acceleration. Like the Lexus, the new NX, whatever it's called, Lexus NX, when you accelerate it, actually preloads the rear axle.
So it's possibly the age of the hardware that's under the Volvo. And, I mean, we've beaten that one to death. So what What are you going to miss the Maxima? Apparently the Maxima's on its
way. No, the Maxima should have been discontinued 5 years ago. The Altima is better in every which way.
I think the Maxima is darn cool looking.
It's sad.
There's something fun.
The four-door sports car has turned into this front-wheel drive CVT.
But there's something fun about a V6 CVT in a big dumb car like that.
Yeah, that's called that.
No, what's fun is a 7-liter V8 in a big dumb car like that. Not a CVT. I don't like that. I'm angry because I remember the Maxima when the Maxima was good. And and I went to the launch. Wow, it must have been two generations ago of the Maxima, and when the CVT first came out, and I was just dumbfounded.
Oh, that's right. Before it got all swoopy, it was like roundy. It looked like it looked just like an Altima, really.
But the truth is, now that the Altima's got the V6 option, you know, you can get the 3.5 into the Altima. I don't know why you would, but there's no real reason to get a Maxima unless you're really just proud. You just can't do the Altima.
I guess. I don't know that neither of those cars are what they once were to me.
I think our advertisers are just dropping like flies, aren't they?
Yeah. Hey, it's an opinion. Cross Volvo off. I would be happy to drive the cars and have my opinion changed, but my experience with these vehicles is that these have formed these opinions. So, I mean, you know, the Nissan Cube, while we stay with Nissan, that one I'm actually kind of sad to see go.
I like the Cube.
It was a funk box.
Because it's cute.
Yeah.
It's
cute. Did you really use the word cute?
I used cute. I almost took it back.
You should.
Can we strike that from the edit?
No, I'm going to leave it in so you can be fully ashamed.
I'll just cuss up a storm. You have to cut like 10 minutes of the podcast out. Son of a beep, beep, yeah. Beep.
You know what? Let's talk politics. Then we'll have to cut a huge section.
The Cube has that cute-ish look, and it drives fun. Nobody expects it to be extraordinary. It's just
It's not extraordinary, though. It's mediocre.
I know. Nobody expects it to be.
But you enjoy it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. And people smile when you see it. Nobody flips off a Cube driver. You just go, oh, he's just driving by.
He's clearly suffering from dementia. It's okay. Do you feel misty because the one series is being sort of eviscerated into two different lines? Or do you even care?
I don't care. I don't care.
I know you and the rental fleets, though, are going to miss the 200 convertible.
The new 200 is so much better than the old one. No, I'm not going to miss it. That to me is a Chrysler LeBaron convertible.
I drove the new 200. I was actually quite impressed with it. It's still kind of small for its class, but I liked it. I don't know if they're going to make a convertible out of it, but
there were renderings shortly after it came out of a 200 convertible based on the press photos of the sedan, and it looks good and natural and it'd work.
Yeah, it would look very good. I mean, there's no great loss to the 200 convertible, though, because Buick is getting the Cascada, right? Is that how you're supposed to say it?
That is the Ruba.
Right. So there's going to be a place for that convertible buyer to go, and it's not going to be a bad car. So there's that. I mean, all the stuff on this list, I think the wackiest one is probably the Murano Cross Cabriolet, and nobody's going to miss that.
Oh, I'm totally going to miss that one.
I don't think you are. I think you're lying.
I would be willing to bet that you're more likely to see, oh man, you know, I can count on one hand. I've seen maybe four or five Cross Cabriolets in the wild, and maybe one of them had its top down.
I've never seen one with a top down outside of an auto show.
I think I've seen about the same as you, Mike.
They are so rare. I mean, you're more likely to see McLaren F1 driving down the road.
Yeah, I've never seen a McLaren F1 driving down the road, so I will say they're less rare than a McLaren F1. I will mark that in the record as my official position on that. Everything else is kind of like meh. All right, I forgot that was even made. So
that's so sad.
It happens though, right? It's attrition. It's just some of these were fun while they lasted. Their time has come, or their time has passed.
Now my favorite one, and it goes back to our Infiniti discussion, is the G37 became the Q50, which now becomes the Q40, that doesn't F your mind up.
The old G37, because the replacement G37 is the Q50, but, right? Or is it the Q60? See, I'm so confused.
So imagine if the Ford Mustang had a completely new name next year and then had a third name the next year.
So the Mustang was the Probe, and then – no, never mind. And the Probe became the Cougar.
The Capri.
Yeah. I think we've lamented these long enough. You guys want to do some questions?
Yeah, I don't see any of those cars. I'm not going to miss any of those cars.
What car would you miss, Mike? So we can remind you when it dies.
I would miss the Miata. I would miss the Boxster, the 3 Series. There are a bunch of big cars that I'd miss. But they're volume. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah. So you'll be fine. You'll find something else to amuse yourself with.
GTI. I'd miss the GTI.
You had to do it. There's the podcast mention of the GTI.
We already have the Fiesta ST and the Miata. We're good.
Right, right.
Ticked all the boxes.
Right. All right. Let's take a question.
I didn't know it.
From email. Jeff Holmes wrote in. He's in search of a replacement for his 2012 Forester. It was involved in an accident.
I was going to say, that's kind of new.
It's kind of new, right. So before he runs off to the dealer, he wants to know if there's a better option. He needs a daily commuter, has to be good in the snow. He coaches ski racing, which is pretty awesome. So he drives around Pennsylvania for races and team practices. So he's got to fit skis in. It's okay if he has to fold some of the back seat, but he needs to carry 3 people. So if we got this, it needs to be a winter car, needs to carry long skis, prefer an SUV or crossover, and wants to stay below 30K.
CX-5 all-wheel drive. Do they make it?
Yep.
Yeah.
CX-5 all-wheel drive.
I think the CX-5 is going to be a lot better driving.
Yeah.
I was actually going to say you should check out.
I don't know if it'll be as well in the snow. It's not a snowmobile like the old.
Buy a set of snow tires. It'll be fine.
Right. Especially if it's got all-wheel drive. And I mean, I'll drive is that like is. Last little margin. I was gonna say you could check out the Cherokee, but I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know how well equipped that is for under 30. I feel like it's actually pretty well equipped under 30K.
It's decent. I think it starts at like 23 or 24.
But it's also not. I think the Forester is actually probably more spacious inside.
You could do really well with a CX-5 Touring all-wheel drive for like 25, 26 grand.
Yeah. There you go. And that's going to be decently equipped too. And it's going to be better economy than the Subaru.
Yeah.
And super great reliability, great safety. It's a top safety pick plus, I believe. Great car.
It's a lot of fun to drive too. I haven't driven a CX-5 in forever, but it's a great car.
I have one now in addition to the McLaren.
Why do you get two cars? You're just one guy.
Because the McLaren is just so much. You have to. It's the release. It's like swimming in the it's like showering after you go in the ocean.
I was wondering where you were going with
McLaren.
That.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering too.
You drive the McLaren and then you jump in the Mazda to cool down and to relax. So,
Okay. I get one car. That's all. And I'm
we're trying to help the listener.
All right, so I don't disagree with this the CX-5. I think that's a good choice. There's the other choices you could make, like the CR-V or the RAV4.
Those are the obvious choices, right? But I think the nice thing about the Mazda is it has some flair. You know, the person that has a Subaru obviously does not want to be the Honda Toyota guy. And to me, it always says, hey, I'm a little different. I don't want to use the word hip, but I'm just a little – I have a little more character in my life, and I buy the Subaru. And I think the Mazda also is the kind of guy that has a little more character.
You know what? Go for the Gusto. Lease an X1 or an X3. I mean, come on. Don't buy it. Just lease it.
Didn't you hear the part about $30,000?
Right, so lease it. They'll make you a great deal with a nice monthly payment. Don't take my advice. That's bad advice. all right. So here's another email question. Sean Flaherty asked, which do you prefer, paddles attached to the steering wheel or to the column, and why?
I have an answer, but go ahead. Someone else first.
I totally want them on the column because they're in the same place all the time. The paddles have to be larger, but at least they're not rotating with the wheel, so you don't have to mentally calculate which one to hit.
I'm not really of an opinion on this one. I kind of adjust to either. I mean,
also generally, I prefer a stick.
Yeah,
I want them on the wheel at all times. The McLaren had them on the wheel just because I generally don't take my hands off the wheel when I'm driving.
Right, quickly. That's my thing.
And I like I put
how
my
do you
hands
text
with my tongue. I actually mount the telephone
like
right
Stephen
below
Hawking.
My chin.
Excellent.
Exactly. I have a Gene Simmons tongue, and I'm really, really good at it. It's a little sloppy. Don't call me when I'm done. But no, I like them on the wheel just because I don't take my hands off the wheel. And if you watch my En Rouge video, you could see me going around a corner and then cursing because I have to take my right hand off the wheel to shift. And that annoys me. I like them on the wheel like they are on F1 cars. And I totally understand why people say, hey, the one on the right's always up and the one on the left is always down. But I just like them on the wheel. I hold on to the damn steering wheel through hell or high water. I'll die and I'll have a steering wheel in my hand.
Are there that many cars still that offer them column mounted? I mean,
no, Lamborghini still does. Lamborghini, Bentley, Ferrari.
But don't you find yourself having to figure out, like, oh, wait, I've got the wheel. Well, I guess it doesn't matter if you don't move your hands.
If you're not letting go of the wheel.
If I'm going around a corner and my wheel is 180 degrees around, I better know which is which way it's going.
Right.
No, I've never – and also, worst case, what do you do? Pull the wrong – okay, worst case, you're at 8,000 RPM and you pull the downshift one.
Right,
and
so you spin –
no, it's just going to go beep, beep until you can't do it anyway. Oh. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's true. Everything's
essentially let you over rev like that.
Everything's so benign.
That. Stick shift, just slam it in at 8,000 RPM, blow the engine up. That's
right.
Fine.
But if you're going that fast, you can't really downshift either. You're going to fight. You're going to know. You're going to be like, all right, oops. Yeah. All right. So I guess we haven't really solved his question, but buy yourself a stick shift. Don't use paddles because usually they're hooked up to an automatic that doesn't shift quickly anyway.
Bingo. There's the answer. Yeah. So, paddles in general suck unless they're hooked up to a DSG or, you know, a real dual clutch transmission.
And that will bounce your head off the headrest because that's what they're supposed to do.
Yep. PDK.
Yeah. Oh, PDK is great. Like, I do not like automated.
I love PDK.
Yeah. That's one of the few that I actually like. So, all right. Let's see. Have you seen the Mad Max Fury Road trailer?
I have not.
Oh. I have not.
Okay. Neither have I, but there's apparently a new V8 interceptor.
So the two-letter answer, no.
No. But that raises an interesting question because there's like all these movies with cars in them that feature prominently, and it's like we're strip mining pop culture from the last 40 years. Who's going to make like an original sort of car-ish movie these days? Like, how many more remakes of stuff can we see? And we haven't seen a remake of stuff like Duel or Two Lane Blacktop or
Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, you can't remake Smokey.
BJ and the Bear.
You can't make
BJ and the Bear is just like that could never be made today because that's.
Hey, there where you're going. Never mind.
That play a big formative role in your.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
my dad was a trucker.
Was he really?
No. Oh. Sounded good though.
It did. It did. You have your. What did you, now?
Yeah,
I want to know.
A big red truck with a white stripe down the side, and had a pet monkey. Met my mom and a. Never mind.
I was getting good.
That's next week's podcast.
Yeah, when Mike opens up.
wrong show.
We get some very specific questions this week, Mike.
Let's hear it.
You're gonna have a great answer for this. Now that the Tobin Bridge in Boston is open for tolls, or it is open tolls.
Like Brandon and I were like, oh, hang on a sec. I prefer the lane number 3 lane.
How long until the state puts up tolls on all the roads? I'm going to say, like, honestly, I'd pay more tolls if they fixed the roads. But
cheers to that.
Like, I'd pay more fuel tax if it paid
for
the roads.
If the roads were glass smooth, I'd pay $5 a gallon. $6. If you knew that the roads were perfectly smooth with beautiful guardrails down right side, I'd pay another $2 a gallon.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could live with that.
But instead, they've got projects, and this is what kills me. They replaced a bridge in town. It's taken them a year and a half. They have one shift. So they work on it in the middle of the day, and they like start at like 8, and they quit by like 4. Like, guys, I want my bridge done. Run 3 shifts. Get it done in 6 weeks, please. It's ridiculous. Well,
you talk about road work like that. There was a story I wrote late last week, and it's a letter from Secretary of Transportation Anthony Fox and 12 other former secretaries of state, and they're talking about the need for, you know, and yes, this is going to kind of get into politics, so Dan, just stop me now if you want to edit this out.
It's okay. We can let's all just make a gentleman's agreement.
Yes, I'm not getting into any like policy or anything like that. I'm simply pointing this out as a really disturbing fact. But according to this letter, I need to find it because we need the exact language for it.
Well, they were talking about funding infrastructure, though. Like, that's one of the things that we've sort of got a chronic problem with is just infrastructure upkeep in the country. It's expensive, and by the time you're done, you need to start again. And there's way too much traffic in a lot of places for the roads that were built. So
this is a quote from a letter that Secretary of State Fox or Secretary of Transportation Fox and his 11 predecessors sent to Congress.
11. Right?
Wow.
Right now, there are so many structurally deficient bridges in America that if you line them up end to end, they'd stretch from Boston to Miami.
Yep. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I actually, a podcast listener works in the office that oversees bridges in some capacity. I don't know the exact title, but I can get more info. Bridges are a big issue. Big bridges are a big issue. Like, the Tappan Zee Bridge in New York, big thoroughfare, it was actually built on wood pilings, and it's had issues for years, sort of like sinking and stuff. So they finally have figured out, like, hey, we're going to build a new Tappan Zee and we're going to have to pay for it some way. So that, like, just the cost of replacing some of those things is astronomical. And
I'm not even talking about like the big scale bridges. Like, right. there's a bridge for those that know, like, northern Oakland County outside of Detroit. There's a Interstate 75 runs right by the Chrysler Tech Center. There's a bridge that goes right over 75, right outside the tech center, that had to be shut down for a weekend for emergency repairs because it was crumbling. Like, this isn't just, you know, the big massive bridges crossing rivers and lakes and whatnot. This is just little overpass type things. Yeah. And it's really troubling because the number of things that can go wrong, say it collapses, say a piece of debris falls onto the road, any number of things can go wrong with it.
Right. Think about it. Just like a chunk of concrete, maybe the size of a golf ball, like, you know, as you pass under it, it's 70 miles an hour.
It's a bullet.
Yeah. That's going to go right through your laminated windshield. That's going to be very unpleasant.
You guys are all doomsayers.
Yeah, well, I mean, here in Boston, our brand new largest federal highway project, the Big Dig.
Have they finished that yet?
Yeah, no, it's been done. They finished it. And then it turns out, you know, the problem with contractors is they cut corners to save money, or things are just not overseen well enough. So we had some concrete panels that were anchored. They're part of like a plenum ceiling in the tunnels. And, you know, the anchors rusted out because I don't know whether it was an engineering overlooked it, that the fact that these things would corrode, or if they were just installed improperly or whatever, but a giant concrete panel fell on a car. And
yikes. The only one?
Yeah. It was not a good scene. So things like that with brand new projects, let alone like old stuff that was built 50 years ago, because a lot of our infrastructure is that old now. It was, you know, what, 1956 was the Eisenhower Interstate Act. So most of the country has been built up since then. It's good times. Get some old stuff out there. We should move on. So here's one. Do you think car companies will adapt start-stop? More car companies will adapt start-stop in the States. And why do you think that it hasn't caught on as much, whereas in Europe it's like almost everywhere?
Cost of fuel, and Americans aren't used to it.
And it
still freaks Americans out.
I don't think it sucks. I don't think it sucks at all.
It does suck. I don't like the current systems that when it's 100 degrees out, you come to a stoplight and they shut off the air conditioning compressor, which should be electric at that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you start blowing warm air and you're like, okay, now I'm shutting off the system.
That's true. You have to have
the ancillaries that support the start-stop system.
Exactly. Like on a hybrid, they've got the electric support, right.
Right, and Europeans,
if you have that, then I can totally get behind it. But yeah, I agree with you in that regard, Mike.
That's my only issue. Pay. But I agree with Brandon that I like it because it does save gas.
Right, and that's where I was going.
But I just don't.
And I always get a chuckle when I'm driving like a 600 horsepower AMG and the start stop kicks in.
It would be better if it were smoother, I think.
Okay, so Brandon, on that same thing, it's I went through
McLaren has start stop, right?
No, it doesn't. But I went through my house and I put all fluorescent and LED bulbs in to save electricity. And then my wife, you know, turns on the electric oven and cooks muffins or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm all, okay, there is a 3,000 watt electric oven that just ran for an hour.
Yep.
Doesn't it negate all of my cost savings?
Well, the thing is, I was looking at those LED light bulbs and it's like $8 for one, and you get a three pack for like $27, and yes. I save 20 cents per year.
Per year, yeah. So 900 years later.
No, it depends on what you
have. They last like 22 years.
It depends on what you have, though, because I've got par 30s in my kitchen. And
if I replace the CFLs that I have now, I'd save like 20 cents a year, and
right. The
bulbs would last like three times longer.
LEDs are so much better than CFLs, though.
Yes. Going back to the cars, Brandon's point is, you know, the SL65 shuts off its engine at the stoplight, and then you give it 3% heavier acceleration, and you've just burned all the gas anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe they should figure out a way to make them just idle on less than all of their cylinders or something.
Yeah. There's plenty of cylinder deactivation.
I want start stop and I want an electric air conditioning compressor. That's all I freaking want.
Yeah. Or you can just be, you know, be more European, be more tolerant to body odor, and you'll be all set.
Put the windows down. It's really beautiful.
I've been driving with the windows down a lot more often, actually, because it's been kind of
summer. It depends on the car. I don't feel like I can drive with the windows down something like the Genesis that I have now.
Really? You should try it.
Well, I'm sure I could, but the F-Type that I'm going to have in a couple weeks, I'll totally drive that with the windows down. I think it's the kind of car you have, but...
Yeah. Some cars don't do well. They just beat the hell out of you with the sound waves. They turn into like a resonator. But not so much with that. So, all right. Well, I mean, I think those are the most pertinent questions, and we have run out to about an hour and a half, so I wanted to wrap it up here for podcast 391. So, Brandon Turkus and Mike Harley, thanks for joining me.
Always a pleasure.
Mike, are you going to be like around in the country? Are you going to be on another episode, or are we going to have to wait like another month?
You don't want that answer.
All right.
Let me look. Hang on. I am gone next week. I'm actually going down to the Outer Banks of North Carolina for vacation.
Is that vacation? What is that?
Yeah, so that's where the California people go on vacation.
Yeah. You know what? This sounds really bad. I live, honest to God, 12 miles from Malibu, and I've not gone to the beach all year long.
Yeah, but Malibu and the Outer Banks are like, I'm sorry, I'm an East Coast guy.
To me, I'm an East Coast guy also. I love it. So
yeah.
I can be on your 18th, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks.
All right. We'll catch up. You know what it is?
Talk about...
It's the Atlantic
Pebble.
Is angry. The Atlantic is angry, and I like the
No, I'm saying that's what you guys can talk about on the 18th.
Yeah, I can talk about that. And I also drove the Pagani Huayra. I can talk about that.
Okay. And
we can talk about cars that we don't miss.
Right. I feel like
the Focus ST, Volkswagen GTIs, Miatas. We can talk about
Okay. I see what you're doing. You're getting all the mentions in.
We got them in though. Brandon counted them off earlier.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, but you got Focus instead of Fiesta. That's good. That's good. That should be still a little spiff in our check. All right. We'll
the guy taking notes.
We'll see you guys next week.
Awesome.
The Autoblog Podcast is brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. You can subscribe to the Autoblog Podcast in iTunes, send us an email at podcast@autoblog.com, or find us on Twitter @AutoblogPodcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.